Welcome to That One Record. I'm Kyle Cresce, and this is episode 8, where we sit down with Drew Thompson of the Drew Thompson Foundation to talk about their 2019 self-titled record. Some of you may be more familiar with Drew Thompson's work as the singer frontman of Single Mothers. They have a fairly extensive catalog already, with more coming, as I learned through talking with Drew here. But I wanted to take a look at this record for a few different reasons. It's very, very different than Single Mothers. Much more poppy, accessible, singer-songwriter style stuff. The second reason, I just like it a lot. I think it's a great record. I think it's a lot of fun. I know Drew a little bit from, we both lived in Hamilton for pretty much the same stretch of time. We'd run into each other on and off. And also, I wanted to look at this record because this was a record that came out end of 2019, and the tour slash the cycle slash everything he had planned with the band and Single Mothers got shut down due to COVID-19. I didn't want to do a COVID episode exclusively, but I wanted to look at a record that was interrupted because of it and how that changed the perception of the record to the artist, how that record performed, a bunch of stuff like that, because especially those bands that kind of put up stuff end of 2019, early 2020, it seems like it almost disappeared. It seems like it almost didn't happen. And how you proceed from there as a band when, you know, stuff like touring came back briefly, depending on where you lived. How do you move forward? Are you still touring that record? Do you feel like you need something else? It's just a whole another layer of the record-making process without focusing on it fully. We got a lot of great stuff pre all that from Drew here, that he talks about the creative process. He talks about his relationship with Dine Alone Records, the differences, and you know, we get a lot of kind of heartfelt stuff from him about, you know, being on tour, the sad event, the loss that triggered him, you know, wanting to write these songs and go forward with a Drew Thompson Foundation record. So we get some insight from that and some idea of where the band's going to go and the future of this side project, solo project. It's hard to really define it, but we're going to take a listen here. We jump right into it. This is Drew Thompson of the Drew Thompson Foundation talking about their 2019 self-titled album. So we're talking about 2019's self-titled, the Drew Thompson Foundation. Your first, I guess, solo record, full length.
Yeah, it's kind of a solo record.
It's got some of the, I think from the lineup here, you've got the drums and bass were Single Mothers guys for the recording.
So
you do, basically leading up to this, you've released three Single Mothers LPs, three Single Mothers EPs. When did the idea kind of go into your head that you wanted to do something else?
Well, the Single Mothers stuff was always like single. I really have very little to do with Single Mothers, music wise. Like I don't do, up until recently. I mean, in the pandemic, I just drank two Diet Dr. Peppers watching the Raptors get smoked. But for Single Mothers, I really have nothing to do with the music side of things. Like everybody just kind of, I get people together and write songs and then I just yell on them. But we've always had a lot of different people in and out of the band. And like in this last touring cycle, it's the longest I've ever had a band together. And like, we just started meshing or whatever. And I had some songs written and I was just like, hey, what do you guys think about these? And they liked them. I have a friend named Mike Riley. Do you know Mike Riley?
I know him by name. He was of in the same scene. I think he's a little bit older than me, a little bit before me.
Yeah, he's a weird guy, but he's a friend of mine. He was like in an emo band. I was in a band with him a long time ago. And I sent him some of the same songs and he liked them and like just the ideas or whatever. And that's kind of how the band got started, was these guys that eventually became in Single Mothers. We've had so many lineup changes or whatever. They really had no connection to the band other than playing songs a lot of other people had written. I had no real connection to the band, and I was like, I think I just want to play in a band where I wrote the songs now. I'm at that age where I don't feel much about Single Mothers other than like it's a fun thing, but it really isn't me at all. Especially since like getting sober and whatever. I've been sober 5 years now. Single Mothers was very much like a character that I kind of played up in my mid-20s of this. Like, it was a very chaotic time for me, but I kind of definitely played that up. And there's a lot of satirical elements to that band that I don't know if they come across or not. But yeah, I was just kind of tired of doing that. And I thought, you know, I want to be in a band that feels more like me now than a character of me or a caricature of me from, you know, 10 years ago or something. So that's kind of where the idea started from.
Do you remember what the first few songs were that you kind of had together and started thinking, hey, maybe I can do a full record of this?
Yeah. So when I was on tour with Single Mothers in the UK, my grandma had passed away. She died right before we were about to play Reading and Leeds Festival. Like, we were at Reading and Leeds. I was in the van. It was like an hour before we were going to go on. And my girlfriend gave me a call and told me that, like, my mom was trying to get a hold of me and she couldn't get a hold of me or whatever, and that my grandma had passed away. And I knew she'd been sick, and I knew, you know what going on tour is like. It feels kind of selfish a lot of time because you've got stuff going on and you just kind of fuck off and do what you want. But I was raised by a single mom. My mom was pretty young when she had me, so I was really raised by my grandma. My grandma was like my mom growing up. She was very much that parental figure. I really didn't get along with my stepdad. My dad was out of the picture. I'd spent a lot of time living with my grandparents when I was a kid. So I was also in the midst of like this touring, and I was really drinking a lot. And so I was kind of avoiding my family for a while. And like, I didn't like touring a whole lot. I didn't like being surrounded by people. I'm quite introverted. And so that was just like fueling this alcohol shit storm. And so when she died, it was kind of like an eye opening, like, oh my God, like what am I doing kind of with my life? It didn't happen right away. It happened when I got back and realized that, well, it took a while to get sober, but that's when the ball started, I guess, was going like, this is fucked up what I'm doing. And so I wrote this song Stay when I got home. It was just like a little ditty on an acoustic guitar about her dying and wishing that, you know, she didn't, basically. And so I wrote that song and I sent it to Mike and I sent it to a couple friends, and they were like, you know, you should write some more. And so I think I wrote Stay and Pace Yourself in like very quickly and close together. And we went in like a week later. I think Mike had some, the way I remember it is Mike had some recording time that he had booked and then decided he didn't want to use it. So I took it, and then we just kind of went in. We had never played the songs together as a band. I just sent them versions of me playing it. And we went to John Dinsmore's studio and just banged out this 4-song demo real quick. Like, I think I wrote Rifle, which is another song on there, the day before going in. And I probably wrote Married to the Night, like, maybe 2 days before we went in. Like, it was super quick, just spontaneous thing. And we all just liked how it came out. And I have a pretty close relationship with this record label, Dine Alone, and I sent it to them, and they were really into it. And that's when we were like, oh, maybe we should do an album. Most of the album were songs that I had kind of just, like, started and never finished over the years. And I had these guys that liked the song. So I was like, man, I think I already have an album written, basically, if you guys want to like check these songs out. And I sent them to those guys. And that's kind of how it started, really. It basically, the band really started because my grandma died and I was on tour and I was sad about it.
And so those four songs you guys recorded, that was an EP that came out prior to all this, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So and that came out on Dying Alone right off the hop as well.
Yeah, that came out right off the hop with them, yeah.
Okay, and so then you've got these songs, you've got these guys on board. How does geography factor into this? You talk about the studio there. You're in Hamilton. You've talked about Mike. And who else are you grabbing to do these songs?
Right. So, okay, let me think, because I don't have a very good memory. So for the EP,
I have a lineup on the record here, but I don't know if the EP is different. Here you got you, Mike, Peter, Sarah, and Riley.
Right. So on the EP, it's just, and I'm only bringing up the EP because two songs are on the record.
Yeah. Stay but, and Pace Yourself, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And on the EP, it's just me, Mike Riley, and Peter Landy. And Peter Landy is a touring musician for Single Mothers also. He's American. And he's been over in Canada because he has a girlfriend here. So he left the States to come live with her. And it just so happened that she was in a Single Mothers music video. And I didn't know. And but he met Mike because Mike was looking for guys to play with through like Kijiji or something. And I told Mike I was looking for guys to do this Single Mothers tour coming up, preferably somebody that I didn't have to put on a visa. And he was like, I know this American. You should talk to him and see if he'll do it. So pretty much sight unseen, I went, if you're American and I don't need to put you on the visa,
you're in.
You're 100% in, yeah. But once we met, his girlfriend came with him and she was like, I was in the music. And I wasn't in that music video that she was in. So we had never met, but she was like, I don't know if you know, recognize me. And I did recognize her. Anyway, so Peter had been playing with me and Single Mothers for a bit. And he lived in Toronto. And so did Mike at that time. I lived in Hamilton. And we recorded this EP at a place called Lincoln County Social Club with a guy named John Dinsmore in Toronto. So I just called Peter and I was like, hey, do you want to, you know, I already know you're good at drums. Why do you want to jump on this EP? And he was like, yeah, man, sure. And so it's been really great being in two bands with people that are just great musicians. Everybody that I try to surround myself are really wonderful musicians. So they've been great just being able to jump back and forth. But yeah, so that's the lineup for the EP. And we didn't have a bass player, but John Dinsmore, the recording engineer, is a great bass player. So he just jumped on bass for those songs because we, again, this was like fly by night. Like I thought going into that EP, I thought it was just going to be me on an acoustic guitar kind of. And then maybe a day or two before we were like, yeah, let's try doing it full band. Thank God, because I'm a terrible guitar player, like awful. And so John played bass on those songs. But when we went to do the record, well, John, he's got a job. And whatever. So we had to find a real bass player. And Riley Simpson is a fantastic bass player who was also playing bass in Single Mothers. So I just called Riley and I was like, hey, do you want to do this? And he said, yes, I would like to. And so the lineup on the record is Riley, me, Peter, Mike Riley, and then Sarah, my girlfriend partner. She plays violin and does some backup vocals, so she came and did that with us too.
So how much rehearsing do you get before going in the studio? So Peter's in Toronto, he's not in the States at the time. Riley's obviously close, playing Single Mothers. Do you guys have a fairly long lead up to it, or is it kind of record the EP, you bring Riley on, jam a few times, and decide we're going to record these songs?
Yeah, so for the record, so after the EP came out and we were going to do the record, we had been on tour with Single Mothers like nonstop. And
is that on Through a Wall?
Yeah, that's for like Through a Wall stuff.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember how exactly it happened. But I had talked to Dynalone when we did this EP about getting somebody to mix it. And Lisa over there, who used to like run Dynalone, she recommended this guy, Alex Newport, who I had heard of. And I have an affinity for British people. And he's British. And so I said, sure, let's get Alex Newport to do it. I love British people. And I trust them no matter what. And so she said, okay, well, set that up. So Alex mixed that record. And then I had talked to Alex a few times. And through that, once Lisa and I were talking about the record, she was like, well, who do you want to record it? And I said, well, you know, Alex is British. Let's just do it with Alex. But he's in LA. And so we didn't have much time to practice before having to fly out to LA. I think we jammed maybe 2 or 3 times. I don't like practicing. I really fucking hate it. And so we probably practiced like 3 times, maybe 3 times, 4, I guess. But I mean, Riley is so good, he doesn't need to. Like, he didn't learn any of the songs. The Single Mother songs, he didn't practice at all before our first show. We had one practice before we toured with this lineup in Single Mothers for the first time, and he just showed up and learned all the songs at that practice as he went, and like, we never practiced, really. But with the foundation stuff, yeah, it's so easy to record now. Like, it blows my mind how easy it is to record. The first time I ever recorded something, I was in high school. I had to go to downtown London, Ontario, to some weird guy's basement, record with him, you know, for a whole day, 3 songs. He'd hand you a CD. It sounded like shit. Nowadays, you can really do wonders here. So we had the songs I had demoed them out a little bit and just sent them to everybody and been like, here's the structure, whatever. And then we had only jammed maybe, 4 times, probably at the very most, before we flew down to L.A. But when we flew down to L.A., Alex had set aside an entire week for pre-production. So we jammed in East L.A., the 4 of us, for a week leading into going to the actual studio, which I think we all realized was redundant. Because it was like, I have a rule, like with Single Mothers, especially, and this, actually, it's all music, really. I'm like, it's not going to get much better than it is going to the first, let's say, 3 times. Anything after 3 times, I do this with vocals. If it's not good after 3, it's never going to get better. Like, this is just it. And I think that rule generally, like, rings true when you've got adequate musicians and things like that. If you don't get the vibe in the first few times, it's probably not going to get much better. And luckily, these guys were all great. And when we showed up to the jam space, I think Alex was really scared that I think like a lot of bands don't really know how to play their instruments, it seems like, or something, because he was stunned that everybody could play. And I mean, I can't play, but those guys can play. And so we didn't need a whole lot of runtime.
Alex seems, just looking from his resume, I actually have friends who recorded with him when he was working out in New York. But he seems like an old school guy, so I'm not surprised he had the pre-production week kind of built into it. In that week, is he acting as a producer on your songs? Is he making suggestions? Is he altering things? Or is he basically just there to see what we got to work with?
You know, like, the only other time I've worked with a producer than Alex, it was like a very hands-on kind of like making suggestions. So I went in there thinking he was going to make a lot of suggestions. He didn't make any suggestions at all. He just wanted to make sure we were tight. And I respected that. I thought that was cool. Even though I was maybe like hoping that he would suggest some things, because I just am self-conscious and don't like, you know, go back and forth. But is this a good...
Yep.
Song? Yeah, like, yeah. Somebody's got to tell me. But no, he didn't really suggest much. He just wanted to make sure we were really tight, because we did all the drums and bass to tape. And it was crazy. He has an insane ear. Like, it's unbelievable.
Is that studio, is that 64 Sound in LA?
Yeah, that was at 64 Sound.
So you've done a lot of records now. What was that recording experience like compared to, you know, we've talked about the old guy's basement. Did you ever work with Adam Bentley in Hamilton?
I've worked with Adam.
Yeah, yep. So like you've had a different kinds of recording experiences. What was that like with Newport inside a studio like that in Los Angeles?
It was, I'm very glad we did it. And I think this was certainly the band to do it with. But like in contrast, so Alex could tell when a drum was out of tune to the slightest degree, just by ear. And I think it drove our drummer, Peter, kind of nuts, because Peter is also a perfectionist, but he's like, I don't hear it. And he would stop the take and Alex would go in and he'd tune the drum just like, you know, the tiniest little bit. And then he'd leave and he'd go, all right, let's do it again. And then, you know, Peter would do the take and he'd go, okay, I get it. I heard it. Like he was right. It was done. But he worked Peter so hard. And to get the tones, because you're right. He is an old school guy and there's not a ton of editing. Like there's hardly any editing. Now, in contrast to like, I just finished recording a new Single Mothers record. I wrote it in a week. I sent it to the guys. We recorded it 3 days later in a day and a half, basically. And Peter did all of his drums in 4 hours. And I just said, fuck it, we'll fix it. If something's really fucked up, we'll just fix it. Like, I'm not spending money on this. Alex went in there and like, it was completely opposite from how I do things. And I appreciate that because that's what you want out of a producer. But yeah, I'm glad that it was that this record and not like a record that I just scream over or something.
So the record comes out September 2019. When were you in the studio?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Now, did you guys fly to LA or was it like the end of a Single Mothers tour?
So we flew to LA and we stayed at that time. Dynalone had an office out there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so they let us stay in the office and we just rented a car. We didn't have a tour or anything booked around then, I don't think. And Sarah, when did we record the Foundation record? Do you remember? So it came out in 2018 or 2019?
2019.
So we would have recorded it in...
Summer of 2018?
Yeah, I think at the summer of 2018, yeah.
And then so when you're in the studio, do you have the album sequenced already? Because you're kind of talking like these were just a collection of songs you had. Did you have to write anything? Did you have any gaps? Like, did you need a closer, an opener? Do you think like that or not really?
Not really. I mean, these were, a lot of them were like ideas that I had kicking around for a long time. And so I just wanted to get them out. Like I write a lot of songs that I do nothing with. And so I felt like, okay, this is like a time to just get a bunch of stuff out. And I didn't have a sequence. I didn't have an idea really. I mean, you always sketch things out in your head and you go, okay, this will be a nice opener. I knew I liked Karma as an opener. And I knew that I kind of liked All I Remember as a closer. And the rest just kind of go in and out. I was more interested to see what they were going to come out as and sound like before going into any of that, any of the detail stuff. Because I've had a lot of experiences in recording where I go in with an idea of how something's going to sound and I come out and it's completely different. Something just happens in the studio or like there's something with mixing where like, you know, we try something, we go and experiment, and then, oh, this sounds way better than the way I thought we were going to do it. And so I try and kind of keep that out of my head and just kind of flow with it.
Did any of the songs surprise you in that way, either positively or negatively, where you thought, oh, man, this one's great, maybe didn't turn out, or maybe there's one like, we might not even keep this, and then after you hear the finished version, you're like, oh, okay, actually, this worked.
I think, like, I thought with People, we did a cover of like a Single Mother song, People Are Pets, on there. And the way that I had it in my head, it really didn't come out the way that I wanted it to. Like, I kind of wanted this like big band kind of Rufus Wainwrighty. I don't even know how to explain it. I wanted like a kind of, what's that live Elvis record where he's in Vegas? There's some live. Anyways, I wanted it bigger and a bit more and a bit different than it came out. And I was a little bit disappointed with how, like, we just ran out of time basically, and couldn't get it together. But we put it out because I still liked that version. But that version of that song didn't exactly come out the way I wanted it to. But the rest, I was quite pleased with. Like, I always go into recording with the expectation of just like it's all a big experiment, and we'll kind of see what happens. There are a lot of bands that really meticulously plan things out, like you mentioned before, but we're not one of those bands. Yeah, no, not really. Everything kind of came out the way I thought it would, except People Are Pets, which I thought we were going to do like a lot bigger, but we just didn't have a lot of time.
And what was the idea behind the album art?
But the album art is by Vanessa Hines, who I've worked with a lot over the last few years, and she just had these pics. And as we were thinking of cover ideas, I kind of thought it would be funny just to have a black and white picture with them. I thought it was really funny that I obviously get to call myself like the angel on the cover. And so we just went with that. It was kind of a sarcastic take on being a good boy, I guess.
How involved typically are you with artwork when it comes to, say, Single Mothers?
I mean, pretty involved. Like, we don't have anybody telling us what to do ever, so somewhat involved. Like, I picked the Butter art cover for Our Pleasure, which I thought was hilarious, but nobody else seemed to care or think anything of it. Like, I thought it was the weirdest thing. And it's kind of a metaphor. That record's a lot about excess and things. And I thought, like, butter is such a perfect metaphor for just, like, the fat of the land and living in this excess. And I also just, it's kind of an inside joke because I just love butter. And so I thought it would make my friends laugh. And they did laugh. They thought it was funny, but nobody else cared. So I don't know. I'm involved enough. Probably too much, to be honest.
So with you talked about kind of the catalyst for writing this record, and something like Pace Yourself, you talk about, is obviously a song about getting sober. Did you have to remove yourself from touring to be able to do that, or were you able to do that as a touring musician?
No, I just quit. I just decided I wasn't going to drink anymore, and I have no problem being around alcohol or people that drink or anything like that. It's not, I tour all the time, and no, it wasn't a problem. I just tour, yeah.
Because Pace Yourself to me seems almost like that was the closest to a little bit of the Single Mother's character, almost.
Yeah, and there, for sure.
Which I guess if you know, it's part of the catalyst for getting sober. That song stood out, and then Break specifically. I wanted to talk about too. Releasing this record, because I remember very specifically at this time, it was the first time I had seen kind of what everybody does now, which is like the slow rollout. So used to the world of just like a single comes out, a music video comes out, boom, the record's out. And it's usually like, it was like a 3 week, maybe a month long period. But it seemed like you slow rolled a lot of these singles. You know, the first couple came out, and we didn't even really have an announcement of a record at first. And I remember wondering, okay, what's going on here? And then finally just talked to Adam. I lived three doors down from him, who was doing the
nice
promo. I was like, is there a record coming? What's the deal? He's like, yeah, it's coming. It's coming. Hold on. But is that something with, you finish this record, you have it in your hands. Now, who's setting the release schedule? Because you work with Dine Alone, with Single Mothers, and this.
Yeah.
So do you have to kind of orchestrate when you can do each one?
I think so. Yeah, at that time, I think it was like we were just touring a lot with Single Mothers around then. And we weren't touring. I wasn't ready to to go all in on the foundation stuff yet. And I think when we were talking about like I don't have a manager or anything, and so it's very direct, just like them and me. And when we were talking about a rollout, I think we were just shooting ideas back and forth, and we agreed that maybe like a long rollout would be good, because then we could still be on tour with Single Mothers, and you know, we had Through a Wall stuff planned, and I thought it was funny. I thought it was cool. A lot of stuff I do, I just think is funny. Like, I thought it was funny to just like put out a song and just keep putting out singles and just not put out a record. But it's also for a new band, it's very hard to keep people engaged, I think. And constantly, we're in this world now of algorithms and things like that. And to do a long rollout, opposed to just like with Through a Wall, there was no rollout. It was just, here's the album, full on, like, that's it. Which I also love. I really like doing that. But I wanted to just try doing different things with this band since it was a fresh start. And I kind of, in a way, wanted to do the opposite of what everything that I do with Single Mothers. And so we went with the opposite of that, which is a long rollout. And I think we thought that all the songs were strong. We were like, oh, these are all like pretty strong songs. They could probably live on their own. And so we went that route. And I liked it, actually. I liked it a lot. It wasn't a lot of pressure. It was easy. It was fun.
So you have the record, comes out in September. And who are you using for the touring lineup?
For the touring lineup, it was the first... So the very first Foundation tour was after the EP came out, and that was me, Luke Bentham, and Ross Miller from the Dirty Nil, my friend Mike, Riley, and Peter. And from there, I did a solo tour across Canada with Dave Haas. And then when the album dropped, we played shows with, it would float between me, Riley, Peter Landy, and Mike Riley. And then sometimes Mike wouldn't be able to do shows. So Danny Kidd from London, Ontario, who plays guitar and Single Mothers also, would come in and fill in for Mike. So that was kind of the lineup there. And then Riley couldn't tour anymore with either band. So for Foundation stuff, my partner Sarah, who is a fantastic violin player and musician and singer, said very graciously that she would play bass. And so she started playing bass with the band. And so it was Sarah, me, Danny, and Peter going forward for the last, up until quarantine. That was the lineup. It was a good lineup.
Basically, do you decide if you're playing solo based on the tour? Like, I believe when we crossed paths, you were playing with Sights and Sounds. You were playing by yourself. Is it basically just based on availability? You know, you can't get a band together in time? Or do you specifically go, I'd rather do this leg by myself?
I think it's almost always just either availability or what the tour calls for. Like, I've really only toured solo a couple times, and that was opening for Dave Haas. And that was because he was also touring solo. It was just him and his brother. And so he asked, like, you know, he didn't want like a big band having to set up every night or whatever, I think, for the first one. And then the second one, I opened up for him in Europe, and he had a full band, but he said I could come on his tour bus. But I could only, it would just be, he was like, you can come on the bus, but it would just be you, kind of thing. And you know how expensive it is to tour. There's no money in opening spots or anything like that. So you don't want to have to ask of your friends, like, hey, do you want to do this for no money? And also, you know, yeah, for negative money.
For negative money.
In fact, how do you feel about a negative return on your time? Is that good for you?
I remember like going to work and like people would ask me like, "Oh, you played the show? Like, how much money did you guys make?" Like, no, I want to tell them. It's like, oh, well, if we factored in like the jam halls we rented ahead of time, the gas and all this stuff, like so, I lost a couple hundred.
Guys, for per diem today, you're gonna pay me. I don't know how that works. Yeah, it's really funny. And like, I mean, I do not like playing alone. I try and convince myself that I do, but again, like, I'm not a very good guitar player. And I rely, when I do play alone, I rely very heavily on jokes and storytelling. And when I went to on tour with Dave, we started in Germany, and like, yeah, and he was playing
bad place. For,
oh yeah. Like when we toured across Canada together, you know, it's like prairie stuff. We're lucky if 100 people came out, you know, but, over there, he's pretty big. And so I think the first show we played, it was like to a crowd of like 2000 people. And I'm up there with my guitar, you know, kind of trying to tell stories and joking. And they know, I don't think they could understand what I was saying, because I know I'm funnier than that. And there was just no response at all. And, you know, they didn't mind my songs, but I'm not much of a singer-songwriter, even though, you know, I want to be. And I don't get nervous at all with single mother stuff. I get no stage fright, nothing. I used to really bad, but it kind of bleeds off. When we're doing foundation stuff, full band, never care. But when it's just me, yeah, I have like a panic attack every night. And I don't find it super enjoyable, but I try and make myself do it because it's a craft that I admire. I really think like stand-up comedy and singer-songwriters are two of... I really respect the lack of tools needed to entertain in those fields. And so I try to make myself do that stuff, but I don't enjoy it. I much rather do it with a full band. And people enjoy it more with a full band than just me, too. So.
I remember the Montreal show, another maybe language barrier, but I almost enjoyed the at times standoffish nature of the storytelling and the jokes, especially when they didn't land.
I do like alienating everybody.
You pivoted about halfway through the set.
I did those shows with Mike too, and it was weird because like he was on keys. It was the first time we tried doing that. It was very weird. I don't think I would do that again. I just try and do stuff when we're on tour that make the other bands laugh. Like Single Mothers were on tour with Cancer Bats, and like I would just, my goal every night was just to try and get Wade to laugh because Wade McNeil was playing with him. And I love Wade. And so every night I would just start telling stories that people in the audience wouldn't really get or like, or like think is funny, but I wouldn't stop until I'd see him crack. And then I don't know. It's what drives, you got to do what drives you.
So you didn't manage to get a full legit touring cycle because obviously this comes out end of 2019. 2020, everything gets locked down. But do you have, even from the writing process to the recording to touring after, do you have any highlights or moments that kind of stand out when you think back on this record?
I think going out to LA with my friends to record songs, you know, that felt like a new start opposed to doing single mother stuff was very exciting. It was a lot of fun and I really, really enjoyed it. I liked being able to sing more on that record and kind of be myself more instead of, I never write to an audience with single mothers, but I think I write to what I think single mothers should be in my head. As to where this band, I didn't have to do that. It was a fresh start and I could just do whatever I wanted. All of that was really special. Being in LA and creating, it's such a cool thing for like, you know, guys in Ontario or people in Ontario, in Canada specifically. But then also it opened up a lot of other opportunities that hadn't been open to me, like being able to play with different bands like Dave or, you know, opening for Pup on this last tour that got cut for COVID was really wonderful, and being able to bring Sarah on tour, even though that was, you know, cut short, it was a really wonderful time. And I'm super thankful for that. Being able to go on tour with my partner was really special and fun. And then the whole COVID thing will always stand out in my memory, having to drive home before we literally got to the border an hour before it was supposed to close. And Peter, We were in Oregon. And so on that tour, the Drew Thompson Foundation was opening up for Pop. And then that tour was going to be 3 or 4 weeks. And then it ended in the West Coast of the States. But then Single Mothers met up with this band, Pairs, right after. And that tour was going to be 6 weeks. So we were going to be gone for 11 weeks total in that run, nonstop. We were just going to, Sarah was going to fly home. This other, our friend Mike Bright was going to fly in to meet us. And we were just going to pick up right where we left off, but do Single Mother stuff. And then I think there were 3 shows left on the Pup tour when everything got canceled and things started getting canceled. But nobody still knew at that point what the vibe was going to be, because they were still saying 2 weeks. So we were at this Airbnb in Eugene, Oregon, which was the last show we've played so far, maybe ever, I don't know. We're supposed to play San Francisco, sold out show. My brother lives in San Francisco, is going to come out, is going to be great. And then, yeah, that show got canceled. But we were trying to figure out, do we go home or do we wait for this Pairs tour to start and just go meet up with that? Because it still seemed like maybe this was going to be a 2-week thing. And my dad works in public health. And then he called me and said, you better leave now because this is going to be longer than 2 weeks. And the border's going to close. And so Peter didn't want to get stuck in the States because he's American, but lives with his girlfriend here. So we drove nonstop from Eugene, Oregon to Oregon, to Ontario. Took, you know, did not really stop at all to make sure he could get in. And we got, showed up to the border an hour before it was supposed to close, and they almost didn't let him in. The border guard said, you know, the border's closed to non-Canadians. I don't think I can let you in. And we just said, I think we have an hour. I'm pretty sure we have an hour. Can you please just let him in? And luckily, Peter was thinking on his feet, and he booked himself a plane ticket home, a fake plane ticket home that he was just going to cancel. And so they looked at it, and they said, well, you're lucky. You know, if you were an hour later, he would have been going back to New York. And we said, oh, well, let us in. And they did. So
from where you were, did you have to dip into Canada right away, or did you go across through the States?
We just went right across the States. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, what a nightmare drive if you had to cross the border quick there and then come across through Canada.
Oh my God, it would have been the worst.
I don't think people realize how horrible that drive is when you have to do that stretch from Canada rather than through the States.
My God, I hate it so much.
Speaking on that, like, one thing I've kind of touched with, I've had a mix of Canadian and American bands here, and I think we've talked a couple times about the context of just being a Canadian band, like getting stuck as a Canadian band. But it seems like Single Mothers, especially in that world, was one of the bands that almost most quickly broke right into the States. Like, how did you guys, it almost seemed like you guys didn't really focus at all or that much on Canada. You just went right to the States. Was that a conscious thing, or is this just, hey, we have some, you know, some draw or some pull down here, we're just gonna go there?
It was just at the time. So Mike Peterson, who played guitar for Single Mothers back then, he had toured the States in a band called Blackbirds. So he just had like connections down there. And I was up north near Kirkland Lake gold prospecting at that time. And when it came down to touring, he kind of just was like, hey, we're going to go to the States. Like, I've got, this is where I can get us to tour because of Blackbirds. We had a joke where he would go like, back when I was on tour with Blackbirds all the time. And so he would go like, back when I was on tour with Blackbirds, I got all these connections. And so we just never toured Canada. We toured at first, like we toured Ontario a little tiny bit. But our first tour we ever did was like 12 weeks in the States in a minivan. We just went straight there. And, you know, a lot of the shows were like little DIY hardcore basement shows and stuff like that from connections he had. So it was really mostly Mike, to be honest. If it were up to, like, I remember being a little hesitant because I had never been to the States before touring it. Thinking like, can we just do this? And you can. It's amazing. Yeah. And so we just kind of did it and never really looked back. We started touring Canada more later in the band cycle of things, certainly, because it's expensive getting visas and everything else. We got caught at the border without visas once, and that was like a nightmare. Yep. Make sure we do it legit now.
We used to do the fake recording contract.
Yeah, we did that, but they caught us.
Yeah, we were never there that long. That's why it worked.
Yeah. We had a tour with Off, and they fucking they caught us. And like the thing is, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's good.
Mike had sent in the paperwork, but I guess there was a typo in his address or something. Or there was a typo in his last name. Somewhere there was a typo in someone's name. And so they sent back the application, but we were on tour. And I guess his parents didn't want to open his mail, or there was some weird thing, but our visas didn't come through in time. And so we just went over anyways, or tried to. Mike went over with the gear doing the fake recording thing. And then the other guys and myself, we all went over on a bus, and they let Mike over and everything. We should have all just gone in the van, really. But they let Mike go. We had asked all the show people to take the band down from like the Facebook pages or whatever, but they Googled one of our guys' names, and I guess one promoter left one show up, and they linked it to him, and yeah, they threatened to ban us for 5 years. They had to bring Mike back, all of this stuff. It was really annoying. And then our passports were flagged for like, they didn't ban us, but they flagged all of our passports for 5 years after that. So every time we crossed the border, it was really frustrating.
Yeah, it's such a nightmare.
Yeah. That's when we started touring Canada more.
So how quickly did Single Mother start going? Because the first time we met, we played a basement show together in London. This was Single Mother's, and you were playing guitar at the time.
Oh, that was, yeah. That
and
was
singing.
Early Single Mother's, yeah.
And then I think the next show, that band Dig It Up tried to steal your guys' bass.
Oh, yeah. There was so much drama back then.
I know, because I know the people in that band, and I remember I remember asking Mike, and he was just, like, mortified. He's like, I was standing there. I was like, there's no fucking way our guys took it. And then they opened up the van, and I was like, oh, my God.
There was going to be a brawl. Like, it was serious. And I thought, man, I didn't think they stole it either. I was trying to calm down the other guys, being like, they wouldn't have stolen it, and they did. Yeah. Wild, man.
So how quickly is that version of Single Mothers turn into the version that's, you know, touring for 12 weeks in the States?
I played guitar in the band when it started. I started the band with a bunch of people basically at a bar after I had quit my job at this real estate firm. And there were just people that were at the bar that night. I was like, I'm starting this band. I just quit my job. Like, whoever wants to do it can do it. And we just weren't very good. Like, you know, it's just random friends that were at the bar that night. So slowly, really, I wanted to be better. I had a chip on my shoulder about like this indie scene in London that was very, I thought, elitist. And I was like, fuck this scene, whatever. I want to be better than these bands. So I was like, if I'm going to be better than these bands, I need to get different musicians in here. And so slowly I started like recruiting other people that I thought were like, I've always tried to surround myself with really good musicians because I'm not very good. And slowly just kind of managed to get these other guys in. And then there's always drama when you're in your early 20s and you're living in a party town and a university town. It's like the drama never stops. Everybody drinks way too much. And I don't know if like the 519, you remember like the 519 board and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
there's always band drama and stuff going on. From starting the band to touring the States for 12 weeks, there was probably three or four different lineup big. There was one huge lineup change where I kind of fired everybody in the old band and then got three or four other new people. And then from then on, there was constantly people in and out. And that was, I wanted it to be that way from the beginning. Like I had a large admiration for what I thought was the way Broken Social Scene was set up. And in a way in my head, I was like, it would be really cool to have like something like that in the punk world. And I kind of molded the way that I was going to run Single Mothers through the guise of how Broken Social Scene just always had people in and out constantly revolving. So that was like the idea of it. And that's why there's always been tons of people in and out.
So now jumping back ahead to Drew Thompson stuff, you've put out a couple of things. I assume you recorded at home, just singles and stuff on Bandcamp. Do you have any plans with Drew Thompson? I guess right now for people listening, we're going, Ontario at least is going into another partial lockdown. There definitely won't be shows for at least a month, whatever. Is it difficult to plan this stuff? You said you're sitting on a single mother's record. Are you sitting on any Drew Thompson stuff or not really?
Not really. I have written a lot of songs over the pandemic. Like, we're sitting on three single mother's albums right now. Two that are fully done, and one that I have to finish vocals on a little bit. So we've been doing a lot of that. And I've just been experimenting more with not being able to be with a band. I've been trying to like learn more about, I use Ableton and samples and stuff, and being able to like, I really love the Foundation and guitar based music, but I also grew up loving the Prodigy and the Streets and like the Crystal Method and stuff like that. So I've kind of leaned a bit more into that aspect. The Avalanches were all huge bands that I loved. And so I've been doing more like experimental stuff that I really like. I don't know if anybody, I assume most people would hate it, but I like doing it. I like writing it. But yeah, I've gotten together with a couple guys like in between lockdowns, and we've written at least a Drew Thompson Foundation EP that I think is really good. And in that Drew Thompson Foundation, like more pop rocky, vein. And I just don't know what we're going to do with it. I mean, through the pandemic, I think everybody that's ever been in a band understands like how annoying it is to book and rebook tours. And like, I think by the third time we had rebooked had a European tour for Single Mothers booked, rebooked. And at that time, and same with Foundation, like we were supposed to open for a Dashboard Confessional tour that was booked, rebooked. And it was just like, all right, you know what? I'm not rebooking a goddamn thing until this is all over.
Yeah.
And even now, you know, I got hit up for a couple ideas and I just went, it's not going to work. I guarantee you it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And then it wouldn't have, you know, so it's too much of an emotional. There's so much currency that goes into a band, emotional currency, time. Like, time is our one biggest asset in life that we have. And I would rather not spend it booking, rebooking tours, trying to get everybody's schedule to work. I'd rather just write songs. And so I've just been doing that. And I think that's what we'll do. And I mean, I used to love touring. We were on tour between Single Mothers and Foundation for the 2018 and 19. Like I was playing over 200 shows a year. I was really enjoying it, but it's not something that like I'm just going to pursue relentlessly until I'm so old that it's just sad or whatever. I'd rather just write music. So nothing in the you know, plans right now for touring with Foundation, but I would love to play some shows again. It's just when and how.
Yeah. So, this is the closest record I've done that came to touching this current era.
Oh yeah.
But anyways, man, I just want to say I love this record. This was a blast talking to you about it all.
Thank you.
It was some great insight. I hope I get to hear that EP maybe this year.
And, yeah, for sure.
And something else. Appreciate the time a whole lot. Thanks for doing
this. Yes. No problem. I hope I didn't ramble too much. I had a lot of caffeine.
No, it was great. Thanks, Drew. That was my interview with Drew Thompson of the Drew Thompson Foundation, all about their 2019 self-titled album. You got a lot of great insight there. One big takeaway I had from this conversation is Drew has just always been a guy who has just been going nonstop with music. And I have nothing but the utmost respect for it. There are very few bands or very few people who do it like that anymore, who go as hard as he does, which is, you know, every opportunity Single Mothers or Drew Thompson has is earned and well-deserved. And I think this record is fantastic. I like a lot of the Single Mothers stuff, especially that last record, Through a Wall. Really blew me away when I was doing some research for this.
this interview. And like you said, he's sitting on two, potentially three records with Single Mothers. There's maybe a Drew Thompson Foundation EP. He was a great speaker. Tons of great insight. I thought there's a lot of cool stories in there. A person I've crossed paths with many times over the years, who's been nothing but kind to me every single time in every situation. If you like the podcast, please share it with a friend. Send it around. Post about it. Instagram, whatever. It really helps. I see bumps in numbers as people post it and tag us in it. If you're Apple Podcast person, rate, review. That helps a lot. Spotify, I don't know if you can... I don't use Spotify, but if there's some kind of rating thing, hit it there. If you need to get in touch with me, follow the Instagram page, That One Record Podcast. If you need to get a hold of me, thatonerecordpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening again, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.